But we tend to associate Germans with Milwaukee. The Irish were the city's first major immigrant group. Historian John Goethe describes the Celtic imprint on Milwaukee.
On St. Patrick's Day, the saying goes, we're all Irish. That's an exaggeration, of course, but parts of Milwaukee are awash in green beer and shamrocks every March 17th. Although the event is a thoroughly modern excuse to party, St. Paddy's Day also celebrates the city's first major immigrant group. Milwaukee's Celtic pioneers arrived in the mid-1830s, one step ahead of the Germans. Beset by famine and bullied by their English overlords, more immigrants left the old sod every year. By 1848, the Irish made up 15% of Milwaukee's population, which proved to be their historic high point. The vast majority settled in the Third Ward on the edge of downtown, where they promptly formed the city's first ghetto. Now a bustling capital of chic, the ward was anything but fashionable in the mid-1800s. It was a filled-in swamp commonly known as the Bloody Third, a reputation earned with fisticuffs. The Irish enclave had the city's largest collection of saloons, and whiskey-fueled altercations were common. When the police tallied their arrests for 1859, Irish scofflaws made up 38% of the total, more than five times their share of the population. In 1857, the Milwaukee Sentinel praised a local Irishman but damned his neighborhood. O'Byrne stands out as a good, peaceable, and upright man and citizen. If all in the Third Ward were like him, the police might be safely disbanded today. Despite their rough start, the Irish made the most of their opportunities. Decade by decade, they moved up and out, generally to the west. For many, the first stop was Torrey Hill, a neighborhood now buried beneath the Marquette University campus. Their next step west was Merrill Park, a settlement of Irish railroad workers on the north rim of the Menominee Valley. There they founded St. Rose Church, a congregation whose membership roster read like the Dublin phone book. Generations later, Merrill Park is still the neighborhood of sainted memory for hundreds of Irish Milwaukeeans. Politics became an almost stereotypical path to higher ground. Fluent in English, famously fond of discourse, and apt to form vote-rich clusters in large cities, the Irish had a major impact on American politics, and Milwaukee was no exception. In 1844, Irishman Thomas Gilbert was elected village president. Following cityhood 2 years later, there was a procession of Irish mayors. Among them, a Dublin-born lawyer with the unlikely name of Hans Crocker, and most famous of all, Daniel Webster Hone. Hone was a socialist who led Milwaukee from 1916 to 1940 and made it one of the best-governed big cities in America. The tradition continues today under another Irishman, Tom Barrett. In truth, Germans had a greater impact, but the Irish imprint on Milwaukee is indelible in politics, in cultural life, and certainly in celebrations. Since its debut in 1981, Irish Fest has grown to become the city's largest ethnic festival, drawing well over 100,000 revelers each year to the largest celebration of Irish music, culture, and cuisine on the planet. So whatever your background, raise a glass of Guinness to the Irish this St. Patrick's Day. Arriving with nothing but hope, they have scaled the heights and added a welcome touch of green to this wintry northern city.
John Goethe is an award-winning Milwaukee historian. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more online at wisconsinlife.org.
And we'll keep the Irish music going now as we ramp up to St. Patrick's Day later this week. We're joined by WPR's music librarian, Sheila Shigley. She's here to share some of her favorite Irish music from groups here in Wisconsin. Sheila, thanks a lot for joining us.
Hi, folks. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's Irish music is a pretty broad descriptor. That's a lot of music over a long time period. What are some of the key features, the instruments that are most common to the music we'll hear?
You know, it's kind of a walk through time. I mean, nowadays, if somebody shows up to an Irish music session with a saxophone, I mean, it's happened, you know, people will say, well, that's really not
Irish. So I'd be welcome there.
You'd be welcome there. But, you know, 1,000 years ago, if somebody showed up to a session with a fiddle, they'd say, that's not proper, you know. So through time, you think of the quintessential Irish instruments as being the harp, the fiddle, and to some extent the Irish drum, which is sort of ubiquitous now.
And are there different genres that we should be aware of as we're listening?
There's anything from the oldest of the old, which is often thought of as being solo performances of like a solo fiddle piece or a solo harp, solo voice. And then over time, people started playing in groups, maybe starting around the 40s. And then now people add electric guitars and it just goes off the rails in a very beautiful way.
Let's hear some music. Let's start off a little more traditional with Turner Collins. So what are we hearing there from Turner Collins, Sheila?
We are hearing a very, very old Gaelic piece, probably composed sometime in the 1500s, possibly earlier, called Bright Quiet Ailey. And harpists were employed, musicians back then, they'd be employed by rich people especially to compose tunes about their loved ones or about the lord of the estate or to commemorate some event. And this is about a young lady who was very much appreciated by the community and everyone wanted to marry her, basically. So this tune has stuck around quite a while. And Turner there is playing a Celtic harp, which is a little different from the harps that we see in the symphony and so forth.
And another aspect of all this, pretty popular right now around St. Patrick's Day, is the idea of the Irish pub band, and you brought some along for that. What is Irish pub music like?
Well, Irish pub music can be anything from what we call green beer music, which is just sort of rough and tumble, hard to distinguish from country music sometimes, to actual old rebel songs, or even instrumentals that is played to like keep people's spirits up. So I think we're going to hear an instrumental possibly here coming up.
You've got a dance song. Who is this?
This is the Wisconsin group, the Curragh.
That Irish drum you mentioned, and I never know how to pronounce Boron.
It is pronounced Boron or Balron. It's spelled B-O-D-H-R-A-N, and it used to be something that you would winnow grain with. And then at some point they found out that it makes a great thumping noise, and it's actually throughout all the Celtic lands, but we think of it as being Irish these days.
And you've got another one from the Curragh, and I don't know if I should try to pronounce this, but I'm going to, Jocko Hazeldine.
Jocko Hazeldine. It's a well-loved ballad. So usually what happens these days in pubs is you'll have a lot of instrumentals going, and then people will quiet down and listen to a great old ballad, and here's one of those.
Tell us about that one.
So that's Josh Perkins, Wisconsin bass musician, singing a very well loved ballad called Jocko Hazeldine, and this told the story of Jocko Hazeldine and his rampages through the world. And so even in a big noisy pub these days, you can usually get the whole place to kind of quiet down if they can tell that there's a singer trying to get the notes
heard,
out.
Yeah.
Special moment always in an Irish session.
You know whereof you speak, right?
Yeah, sometimes they don't quiet down always, but often they will, and it's a lovely, lovely moment.
Let's check out one more. Mysirk, am I saying this right? A more modern take on Irish music?
This is Mysirk. Brett Lipschitz and Randy Gosa and Asher Gray, I hope they'll forgive me. I'm using them as the Irish music running off the rails example, but no, they have this fusion of jazz and rock. This is not quite out there, but you'll get a taste.
Sheila, as we wrap up here, what are you going to be doing for St. Patty's Day? You're a musician, a singer, all of this. What's your dance card look like?
Well, today I played for the Regis Senior Center St. Patrick's Day Luncheon, and I just love the Americanness of that. And they always have us every year, and it's so much fun. And then we're going to be playing around town all through from dusk till dawn on March 17th, and I think we have a few spillover gigs after that. So
nice. You'll be busy, and you'll be very sleepy come next week.
I'll probably sleep for about a week and then wake up in time for Milwaukee Irish Fest.
Well, Sheila, thanks a lot for joining us today. today.
Thanks for having me.
That was Sheila Shigley, music librarian at WPR, and occasional voice of Simply Folk, sharing some Irish music made in Wisconsin.
Coming up, California could soon raise the legal minimum smoking age to 21. We'll talk about whether or not these laws are effective and whether that change would be right for Wisconsin. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time.